Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q4 FY23 earnings conference call of APAR Industries Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ambesh Tiwari from S-Ancial Technologies. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Ambesh Tiwari from S-Ancial Technologies. I welcome you all to the fourth quarter FY23 earnings call for APAR Industries. To discuss the business performance and outlook, we have from the management side, Mr. Kushal Desai, Chairman and Managing Director, Mr. Chaitanya Desai, Managing Director, and the CFO, Mr. Ramesh Iyer. I would now pass on the mic to Mr. Kushal Desai for the opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you, Ambesh. Good afternoon, everyone. I will start off by giving a quick overview of our performance and follow that up with a short industry update. We can then get into more details on the segmental performance of our three major businesses. Post that, we will open up the floor to questions. During the fourth quarter of FY23, the consolidated revenue for APAR came in at 4,089 crores, which is 36% higher than the previous year. We witnessed volume growth across all the three divisions, and in particular, export of conductors and cables, which were the major contributors to this overall growth. Exports grew by 85% year-on-year, contributing to 53% of the company's revenues for the quarter, compared to 39% a year ago. The EBITDA for the quarter is up 146% to 445 crores at a margin of 10.9%. PAT came in at rupees 243 crores, which is 194% higher than in the previous year. The PAT percentage is 5.9% versus 2.7% a year ago. If you look at a full year consolidated basis, the revenue came in at 14,352 crores, carrying a growth of 54% year-on-year. PAT at 638 crores is 148% higher than the previous year. Export for the full year contributed towards 49% of the total revenues, which is 97% higher than in the previous period. This has been an all-time high top line and bottom line for the company as well as for export revenues. Coming to the power sector, I would like to just update a couple of major areas. The power generation in India grew at the fastest pace that it has in the last three decades, with a jump of about 11.5%. This was led by actually the intense summer heat wave from the last summer and colder than usual winter in northern India. There was also an economic recovery that led to a jump in electricity demand. This forced the cranking up of output from coal plants as well as solar farms, as there was this scramble to actually avoid power cuts. The output from plants running on fossil fuels grew by 11.2%, which is actually the quickest growth that has happened in the last three decades. There was a 12.4% surge in electricity production from coal, and that offset a decline that had happened from gas-fired plants, basically due to the spike in LNG prices. If you look at the total power supply during the last fiscal, it is at 1.5 trillion kWh, which is 8.4% higher than in the previous year. India still faced a power deficit of 6.69 billion units, and this is the widest deficit that it has had in the last six years. Even though power production was 8.4% higher, the deficit was still the widest in the last six years. In the new fiscal that began last month, Indian power plants are expected to increase power generation from coal by about 8%. The acceleration of coal-fired output to address a spike in power demand highlights the challenges which are being faced by India as we try to wean off the usage of carbon and ensure energy security for our population. On the renewable side, India's solar capacity additions have grown by about 20% during the just ended fiscal year of FY23, boosting the renewable energy output to 33 billion units, or approximately 22% of the total power being generated. The green energy output helped prevent 32.5 million tons of CO2 emission that would otherwise have been produced from coal. The share of renewables in power generation, excluding big hydro and nuclear power, so essentially this is small hydro, solar and wind, has increased to 11.8% compared to 10.8% in the previous year. And the main increase has come from solar, which is 35% higher than in the previous year. I would now like to spend a few minutes to cover the business highlights. Our conductor business had revenues in Q4 FY23 growing by 41% year-on-year to reach 2,121 crores with a volume growth of 46% in the quarter. The export revenue grew by 81% year-on-year, contributing towards 58% of the division's overall revenues. The premium products contributed to 45% of the revenue mix. EBITDA per metric ton post forex adjustment came in at 58,000 rupees a ton, which is a historic high. As we have been mentioning earlier, the conductor division has seen a major transformation in its journey over the past decade, and the various investments which we have made in R&D have helped us to tap opportunities both in the domestic as well as the overseas markets. Looking at a 12-month picture, the conductor division revenues came in at 7,013 crores, which is up 67% year-on-year. The physical volumes of conductors manufactured is up 49%. The EBITDA per metric ton for the full year period came in at 44,114 rupees per metric ton, which is 158% higher than in the previous year. The total order book that we have as of 31st March stands at 5,124 crores for the conductor division. So overall, the division has had an excellent quarter as well as the best 12 months in its history. The division's higher profitability can be attributed to a much higher share of premium products as well as a high share, a historic high for exports in the non-premium products. Also, the market conditions in FY23 were the most favorable that we've seen during the post-COVID period, where customers paid a premium for reliability and quality, and also there were substantial freight gains as the container freight rationalized over the year. The losses from FY21 and 22 due to freight were to a very large extent actually compensated in FY23. Having said that, the competitive dynamics in this division have intensified, including from Chinese suppliers who have started pricing sharper and also are trying to find ways around the higher tax regimes that have been applied on them from the United States. We also are seeing an inventory adjustment taking place as customers reduce the higher level of inventories that they had built up to insulate against supply chain bottlenecks. So this has resulted in a lower level of orders which have been coming in the short term. Coming to the oil division, Q4 FY23 revenues came in at 1,179 crores, which is up 28% year-on-year. The volumes grew by 12% in the quarter, driven by a higher base oil price. Exports contributed towards 45% by revenues and 47% by volume. EBITDA post forex adjustment came in at 3,697 rupees per KL, which is in line with the guidance which we had given earlier. The lubricant revenue for the quarter was 231 crores, with a total volume of 18,370 KL. So during the 12-month period, oil revenues are up 31% to 4,656 crores. The volume grew 5% in the period. EBITDA post forex came in at 4,781 rupees per KL. And this was largely due to a much higher margin in the first quarter and then a revival of bringing margins back closer to normalcy in the February-March months. Transformer oil, which accounts for about a third of the oil division, grew at a faster pace than the other categories. And with the developments that are happening in the infrastructure space, we expect a steady demand to continue for transformer oil, both domestically as well as overseas. Towards the end of the year, the margin pressures which were there from the mismatch in cost versus selling prices have also eased. And we should see better profitability and consistency in performance even on the lubricant side, which includes the industrial and automotive lubricants. Now coming to our cable business revenues grew 38% in the fourth quarter to reach 943 crores, with a significant increase coming from our elastomeric cables as well as exports. Exports contributed towards 54% of sales in Q4 versus just 27% a year ago. The elastomeric cable revenue grew by 20%. We see robust business continuing to come in the renewables energy space, especially from solar installations. The EBITDA post-forex came in at 117 crores, which is 12.4% of revenues. So this is a good 7% higher than what it was in the same period previous year. Looking at the 12-month picture, FY23 had cable revenues increased by 64% year-on-year at 3,263 crores. The elastomeric and export business were the two main drivers, with export contributing towards 52% of the annual revenues of the division. The EBITDA for the year came in at 10.3% versus 5.3% for the previous 12 months. So overall, we had a very strong FY23, and this has of course been the all-time high performance across all the three major divisions combined. Robust growth not only in the top line but also on the bottom line. We are quite optimistic about growth prospects of the company as the domestic and global macro environment continues to remain favorable, with the thrust on infrastructure and renewables, which we expect will continue for the next few years. We also recognize that in FY24, the post-COVID demand and premium on quick and reliable deliveries, as well as some of the strong tailwinds, may taper to some extent, but we are overall quite positive about the prospects of business over the next 3 to 5 years. I would also like to point out that we have updated our corporate presentation to make it current. It's already up on the website and it carries a lot of detailed information, much beyond what I was able to summarize earlier in the call. I would also request you all to go through the latest APAR ESG report, which was put up a couple of months ago in the sustainability section of our website, and that updates all the company-wide initiatives in this most important area. So with this, I'd like to come to the end of my comments. I'd also like to thank all of you for joining this call, and we can open up the floor to questions, please.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one at this time. The first question is from the line of Garvit Goyal from Nvest Research. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Good evening, sir, and congratulations for a good set of numbers. My question is particularly on the conductor segment side. Like you mentioned in quarter one FY23 con call, you guided for EBITDA per ton somewhere around 17,000-18,000. So my question is, what exactly the driving the change in EBITDA per ton? Like, I think three quarters before you mentioned 17,000-18,000, in this particular quarter, this figure is around 55,000 per ton. This is a significant change. So, if it is a permanent change, like because of the structural changes you are mentioning, product mix and geographical mix, so then I think investor community should assume these kind of realizations going ahead, right? I'm asking this because, from here, if realizations come down, then we will not be able to grow our EBITDA in particular segment, even if the volume grows from there.
There are multiple reasons for this increase in EBITDA. One of the key reason is, and we have elaborated in our investor corporate presentation also, is the transformation shift that has happened in the conductor division over the last 2-3 years. Earlier, it was largely the conventional conductors catering to the domestic market, where the margin used to be less because of competition intensity. But over the last 2-3 years, we have been executing more of premium conductors, due to which our margin profile has changed considerably as compared to the earlier period. What has also happened in FY23 is that not only we have been servicing the domestic market, but also opportunities are coming in the export market. So what we see in FY23 is that not only our conventional conductors that caters to the export market have increased in margins, and also the premium conductors are also been having a higher margin. So overall put together, we have seen a high margin in FY23. And also some of the macroeconomic and geopolitical environment has favored us. That has also helped us to increase the margin in this year.
So my question is still not answered. Like, going ahead, whether these kind of margins or realizations are sustainable or not for this particular segment?
So we have been increasing our guidance continuously over the last 1 year, and we continue to keep a guidance of about 25,000 per metric ton EBITDA at this stage also, plus some of the tailwinds that may come in the future, which as of now it's difficult to predict because it depends on various macroeconomic and geopolitical situations. Even last quarter we have been guiding about 25,000 per metric ton. So at this stage we feel that on a long-term basis we expect the EBITDA to continue at about 25,000 per metric ton. Any tailwinds that arise in future would be added on top of this margin.
You are saying this macroeconomic environment, and part of the reason you mentioned is freight. So freight rates are coming down, so that will be reflected in your EBITDA realization, right, in the coming quarters?
Yeah, freight rates has been coming down, and accordingly we pass on the freight benefits also to the customers, unless there are some prices which are already locked in the pending orders, but largely we pass on the cost to our customers.
Okay, and what about the volume growth in FY24 on the conductor and this particular oil segment, right, sir?
Can you repeat the question, because the voice was a little muffled.
I was asking for the volume growth guidance for.
So the volume segment growth, we expect approximately a 10% growth in volumes to 175,000 to 180,000 metric tons. Also, further to what Ramesh mentioned, that in FY23, there were a couple of very helpful tailwinds where, you know, we had taken freight hits in FY21 and FY22, which turned positive in FY23 wherever the freight rates had been fixed. Now, going forward, as you get into FY24, the rates obviously are more current, and we don't expect any gain coming from there. The second thing is that as, you know, supply chains were quite broken leading up to FY23, customers in the United States and many of the export markets who actually bore the brunt of this were prepared to pay a premium to suppliers who had high quality and high reliability because their projects were already delayed. And as a consequence, you know, the negotiations really, or the premium that you got on the price was relatively easy to pull during FY23. Now, having supply chains having got normalized, obviously, there is more discussion, negotiation, and pressure on prices and margins, which is more in line with the normal scenario. And what Ramesh also mentioned in here is that because of the premiumization of products, you will see a long-term change in the EBITDA from 10,000-11,000 rupees a ton, which is what we had for several years, increasing to the 25,000, plus, of course, if there are any tailwinds which come in, but a steady state of 25,000 per metric ton.
And sir, you mentioned the supply chains getting normalized. So whether they have been normalized or they are going to be normalized in coming quarters?
So the supply chains have all got normalized now. So today, getting containers is not a problem, not only in India but anywhere in the world. There's enough capacity of liners. There is no congestion at ports, you know, which is landing up with hundreds of vessels, you know, wanting to berth. So that whole thing has got cleaned up in the United States and in most ports around the world. So supply chains are now pretty much normal.
Okay, and on the oil segment side, so what will be the volume growth side and the EBITDA realization?
So in the oil vertical, we are looking at about a 5% volume growth, and our guidance on EBITDA, you know, continues in the 5,000 to 6,000 rupees per KL. Last year we came in at a little over 4,700, but with the situation having pretty much normalized in terms of unit margins, especially for the lubricant side of the business, our guidance is around 5,000 to 6,000 rupees per KL with a 5% increase in production. And now if you ask for the third division, which is the cable division, there we are expecting about 25 to 30% growth and an EBITDA between 10 and 12%.
Okay, thank you. And one last question is, you mentioned in your opening remarks regarding FY24 catering of kind of muted this one. So is it likely to be a muted one going forward?
Again, I couldn't hear your question. Could you repeat that, please?
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Goyal. There is an airy disturbance coming from your line, sir. Request you to use the handset mode, please.
Yes. Hello. I'm audible, sir?
Yeah, this is a little better,
Okay. Sir, in your opening remark, you mentioned like FY24 to taper off or kind of. So can we take it is going to be a muted one?
Muted in the sense that we expect both the oil division and the cable division to have a higher revenue and profitability, profit number. In the case of conductors, you will see a higher growth, but the profitability, you know, which averaged 44,000 for the year, is something that's not easy to repeat. So, because there were a number of favorable wins, so our guidance for that is 25,000 plus. You know, there could be some tailwinds that actually come in, but that would be clear only once you start closing orders. You know, we're right at the beginning of the year, and there's still a lot of uncertainty that's, you know, that's running.
Understood. Thank you very much, and all the best for the new effort.
Okay, right. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pratiksha Daftari from Equitas Investments. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity. So, right, you mentioned that, you know,
please
rates are coming down and competition.
Your voice is quite feeble.
Hello. Can you hear?
Yes.
Am I audible?
Yes.
So, okay, I was saying that with, you know, you mentioned that competition has intensified and freight benefit would also probably not, you know, carry, be sustainable in next year. What about, you know, our raw material prices, with metal prices being, you know, in a range-bound fashion, would that also impact our profitability going ahead?
So, you know, as we've always mentioned in the past, we don't really take a call on raw material prices. We just hedge. Premiums have gone up slightly. The MJP, which is one of the key benchmarks in terms of measuring premium, they were steady at around $80 to $90 a ton, which have now increased to about $120 a ton. But that is being factored into the pricing of our products. So we don't really see any major impact from the metal side because it's all back-to-back hedged.
Okay, got it. And in terms of the order book that we mentioned about, I think 5,200 odd crores, how much would be premium products and how much would be exports? This is
about out of 5,000 crore, about 40% would be premium products.
Okay. And exports?
Exports out of 5,000 could be about 60%.
Okay. And what I understand is that we had some share of railway orders and conductors. Do we see that, you know, plateauing, considering that the railway electrification target is nearly achieved or at least a good amount of work is done?
So, there are the following, you know, sort of phenomena that's happening, that there was program one was converting diesel to electricity in terms of running the locomotives. So that program is at a very advanced stage. You'll only see about another year or so in which that target will be met. However, what's happened is that the lines which have been set up, both contact and catenary lines, are not high capacity or high ampacity lines. As in, there's limitations in terms of the amount of current that it can carry to run Vande Bharat trains and high-speed trains at its full capacity.
Okay.
So therefore, there will be a certain level of reconductoring that will come up if these trains are supposed to reach their full potential. So I guess the program will get over, and then there could be a gap, and then these reconductorings will have to be done. Otherwise, you've got trains that can run at, you know, 160, 180 kilometers and are running at only about 100 kilometers an hour.
Okay, understood. And in terms of, I know that you guided for...
Just, by the way, APAR has been ready with this from day one. We have the alloys, you know, the R&D was done several years ago and products are already ready and commercialized. But at that point in time, Indian Railways didn't want to use the high ampacity product. So as these tenders come up, we are already ready with the products.
Wonderful. That's really nice to hear. Okay, in terms of, you know, order pipeline, if you could get share some color on that. Hello?
This, sorry, what was your question on?
Pipeline of order.
Pipeline. Order pipeline for both cables and conductors.
Oh, conductors, we still about 5,000 crore is the pending order book.
No, I was just mentioning the tenders that are open, because we are seeing a lot of T&D orders that are getting announced for the EPC companies. So just wanted to understand what are the, how does the orders that are in process look like?
Yeah, those are going on in a full-fledged way right now. They are in the process of placing orders on domestic parties such as ourselves. And those will be executed in this financial year. And then next round of TBCB tenders are expected, which will help us to, you know, feed the supplies in the next financial year.
Okay. Okay. All right. One question on cables. Just update on the CAPEX plan. And also, what is the execution period of the order book?
The order book which has been spoken about is the order book for conductors.
Cable we have given an order book of about 1200 crores. Should be just over a quarter's order books.
Okay. All right. And the capex for cables?
So is the total capex that we are planning to invest is about 400 to 450 crores over the next 12 to 18 months. Because some of these are now longer lead items, you know, for increasing capacity. So of that, the cable portion is approximately 260 to 270 crores.
Okay.
And that includes actually us acquiring a new greenfield site.
Right.
Which is close to where the current plants are located. So our plan on the cable side is to do this capex and invest a little bit ahead of the curve. Because, you know, for example, while talking to all the major customers that we have in the United States, their projection is that their execution of solar installations today is running at about 15 gigawatts per annum. And in 2 years' time, they expect it to run at 30 gigawatts per annum. So, also if you see in India, every year the implementation of renewable energy has been growing. So, that's the reason why our plan is to invest the total capex of the company about 400 odd crores. Conductor division will be about 100 crores. Cable will be about 260 to 275 crores. And the oil division is much smaller at about 20 to 25 crores.
Okay, but we have some capacity that was expected to be commissioned sometime around this quarter or next, right?
So we have one phase of this which is getting commissioned in end of June, beginning of July. So that capacity will be available from the third quarter. But there's a whole lot of new equipment that's been ordered, and continuously through the year you will see it coming in and getting installed. There is the greenfield side, of course, has some amount of upfront investments, the acquisition of the land and getting the greenfield site ready. But then once the initial site is ready, then it allows us to again modularly keep on expanding capacity on that site.
Okay, understood. And in terms of our interest cost, how do we look at that going ahead? Would that be in, increasing in tandem with the volume growth?
So interest costs have almost peaked now in quarter four, quarter three,
right.
Quarter four. And depending on further increase in interest rate, it could further go up. But we feel that about quarter four numbers could be what we expect for the rest of the year, unless there are further increases. Of course, it will go up in line with the volume increases, but in terms of the rate, quarter four captures most of it.
Okay. All right. Congratulations for good set of numbers. Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Charanjit Singh from DSP Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations on a good set of numbers. So, sir, specifically I want to touch on the export side. In terms of, you know, overall contribution, we have seen rising to almost around 49% exports. And if you can just, you know, give us more color in terms of the different geographies, like you touched about, you know, US specifically. I think you were also working on the other geographies, maybe like Australia and all. How we can see this exports? Can we see it going further up? What's the kind of, you know, growth on this high base we can see in the exports overall opportunity? That's my first question.
Okay. So on the export front, the growth is really being led basically by the addition of renewable energy. And the largest market that we have currently is North America, is the United States. Cable sales into Europe has also started increasing, mostly going into, again, solar installations. We've seen a steady growth in, I mean, a steady set of orders coming in from Australia. There we are seeing basically two areas. We're seeing solar and wind installations, again, that's the renewable energy generation, plus the metros that are being built in all the major Australian cities. So because we were one of two major suppliers into the Sydney metro, we are getting an opportunity to also bid on metros that are being developed in all the other major Australian cities. Besides this, there are opportunities that are coming up even in Latin America, countries like Colombia, Chile, etc. In Africa, we've been supplying product largely to Ethiopia, which has been African Development Bank funded or other multilateral agencies funding electrical infrastructure there. So these are the principal geographies where we are seeing the growth, and we expect that for the next 3-4 years the growth will continue from these geographies. There are on and off demand from many others, but these are the 5-6 major markets from where we see the business coming for both our conductors as well as cables. In terms of the oil side of the business, the supply overseas is quite steady. Again, any electrical installation needs a transformer, and these transformers are all oil filled. So, there's steady growth taking place even on the transformer oil side.
And sir, you talked about this Chinese now manufacturers also at looking at these markets. So how do you see China opening up impacting and their supplies now getting back into the market? And you also highlighted that they are trying to overcome some of the duties and all. So can that impact these export numbers to any extent?
So I don't think it will affect necessarily the volume of export that we have, because the market itself is expanding. But there could be an influence on the unit pricing. There are two things the Chinese companies are generally doing. One is that they have been involved in M&A activity, buying out players located in favorable geographies, and not changing the name of the company or anything, and continuing to supply in those companies' names. They've also set up manufacturing, or are looking at setting up manufacturing in other geographies which are greenfield. And finally, some of the companies are setting up finishing facilities. So the conductor and various other parts of the cable will be coming in from China, and just the final step is done in a country like Vietnam or Korea, one of these which don't have any or do carry some favorable duty structures with respect to the United States, etc. So, however, when you do all of this, there is a cost increase that takes place. You're not just as competitive as manufacturing in China and exporting, but it saves them money relative to paying the higher US duties, for example. So we see that the pricing may come under some amount of, margins may come under some amount of pressure, but the volume itself is growing. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, sir. That's very helpful. Sir, if you can just also give the numbers for acceptances, how acceptances have moved.
Yes, so our interest-bearing acceptance is about 3,600 crores.
You're talking about letters of credit?
Is that the number you wanted?
Yes, sir. And how do you see now acceptances going forward? Any thoughts on...
This is usual creditors for us, for acceptances. We take the credit periods for the maximum period, and it will go up in line with the volume of the business and the rates of the key raw materials.
Okay, sir. So just lastly from my side, if I can squeeze in another question. You have also talked about industries and corporate as one of the segment which is almost around 17% of our revenue. And this is having a very significant industries like railways, defense, shipping. And if you can touch upon how these industry segments are operating, and do we see a significant uptick coming in these segments?
So from the cable perspective, the railways will be a major segment going forward because, as you can see, there is a very large amount of locomotives that are being ordered. In fact, Siemens has received an order for 1,200 locomotives to be delivered over 10 years. Similarly, there are all these Vande Bharat trains are going in, which consists of the locomotive and the bogies. It's a full integrated train. So as a consequence, cables into the railways are definitely increasing. There's also CapEx that's happening in the industrial segment. So manufacturing plants coming up, etc. So the good thing is that no matter what plant you're agnostic to a manufacturing plant, you need cables to be able to deliver power to run the equipment, etc. So that's where we are seeing the industrial side picking up. The railways, as far as defense is concerned, there is a steady increase taking place. It's nothing dramatic. But you'll see a step up on the railway side because of the large locomotive and Vande Bharat expansions that are happening.
Got it, sir. So just one thing on Anushakti wire, because wires is another segment where we had.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. Just last question from my side, sir. Just if you can. Hello?
Yeah. Continue.
Yeah. So just on Anushakti wire, sir, because we had started doing significant branding exercise, channel expansion, and a lot of team building on that side, as we can see. So if you can just touch upon that initiative, this is my last question. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is going very fine for us. If you see, we have a slide on that that shows you how much progress we have done over the last 1 year in terms of increasing our channel expansion, distributor presence, active state presence, as well as various demos and electrician meet. So it is progressing as per our internal estimates on the overall sales.
Essentially, we had, if you look at the channel, almost a 70% growth from last year to this year. And then we will see an equal growth from this year to the next year. So we are adding almost a little over 100 crores a year from FY23 to FY24 as far as that channel is concerned. So it's basically the anchor product there is our Anushakti wires, which are the best in class. And then along with that, there are other LT cables and three-core flat and a whole bunch of other products that go along with that through that distribution channel. So that part of the business is growing. If you go to the corporate presentation that has been put up on the website, there is a slide that actually details dealer addition, retailer addition, etc., etc.
Great, sir. So thanks for taking my questions. That's all from my side.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kaushik Mohan from Ashika Stock Broking. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations for the great set of numbers. I just wanted to understand your order book and what is the total size of the order book currently, and for how many years is that order book there for?
So conductors order book is about 5,000 crores, and typically expected about seven to eight months of execution. Because of cable, our order book is 1,200 crores. It will be just over a quarter.
Okay. Sir, and I also wanted to understand another thing. What is your revenue guidance for the coming next 3 years?
So we have given a guidance on the case of conductors, volume would be about 10%-15%. In the case of oil, it would be 5% on volume, and cable value would be about 25%-30%.
Okay. And sir, is this the net profit currently, which is around 4%-4.5%? Is this a sustainable margin going forward?
So we don't give guidance on the profit percentages because the values and the percentage will depend on the raw materials and the price movements. Therefore, we give an EBITDA guidance, which has already been shared.
Sure. I can see that in the presentation. And the presentation is really fantastic, sir. And the last and final question, what is your conversions of cash flow from operations to EBITDAs or EBITDAs to cash flow from operations?
It's actually there in the cash flow statements. So you can see that. Probably the cash flow statement where you'll be able to see
the future here. Because normally it is standing at a 50% on an average. I just wanted to understand in the coming years also, will it be the same?
Well, it should be in line with the sales growth that should happen, unless if there are any abnormal changes in working capital, which we don't expect at the moment.
Okay. Sir, another capex of 450 crores is your, what you are speaking about.
In 450.
450 crores. So it is going to be in the duration of next 1 year to 18 months. Sir, this major capex of this one will be in the cable segment. Is my understanding right?
Yeah, about 260 to 275 crores will be in the cable segment, about 100 crores in conductors, and around 20 to 25 crores in the oil business.
Okay. What can be the incremental asset turns on this cable side, only on the cable segment?
Between 8 to 10 times.
8 to 10 times. Thanks, sir. Thanks for this. And congratulations for the fantastic numbers. And I expect same kind of presentations in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mihir from Carnelian Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for giving the opportunity and congratulations on a good set of numbers. Sir, largely wanted to understand, when we see the share of premium products, so that's like was 49% last time and has gone to 44% this time. So it is the exports plus the freight benefit, which is driving the overall profitability on the conductor side of the business. So I just wanted to understand, given with now Chinese players coming into picture, how are you seeing the incremental orders getting priced in? So the 5,000 crore order book that you are having, what could be the pricing of that order book? And when one should expect the normalization of margins to happen, do you expect that to immediately happen in first quarter, second quarter, or do you expect that to be more back-ended in second half of the year? And also wanted to understand on the freight cost, currently we have posted 58,000 kind of a profitability. So what could be the element of freight cost benefit that one should consider in this number, which will not be there in the normalized number? Yeah, so just wanted to understand that.
Yeah, so, freight cost for us actually depends on the execution of orders, because the order book, you may have a long pending order, and the execution of that may take, some of the execution may take more than 3 months, 6 months, or there could be some orders in the pending order book that may get executed in FY24. It's very difficult to give an exact number of how much could be the freight, because there are various factors. There could be freight saving, there could be steel cost saving, etc., which could be included there. And there could be some carry forward from the pre-COVID COVID times order that is coming into this execution. So it's very difficult to give a number that we can say that X amount of savings per metric ton is included in 58,000, which may or may not recur in future. And therefore, we are actually giving a guidance for the future profitability, which is 25,000 per metric ton plus the tailwinds that can come in various forms, which includes freight, which includes macro environment and Chinese competition intensity, etc.
Sure, sir. And just on the order booking that we are having, 5,000 crores of order book, to understand it qualitatively, let's say while bidding new orders over the last 3-4 months, given the fact that Chinese competition is coming back, are we bidding projects at comparatively lower margins than what we were bidding let's say 6 months back?
So let me just comment on that. So as far as the domestic market is concerned, of course the Chinese don't have a role to play there. As the TBCB contracts or other tenders keep growing, there's been one major change in that. So from FY25 onwards, we will see benefit that a higher grade conductor is being used, which is an HTLS conductor, which is called AL59. So there is one change that's happening in that. It's like an in-between conductor. It's not HTLS, but it's an upgrade on just a normal conventional conductor. As far as the export markets are concerned, the US still continues to carry a higher duty on the Chinese products. So if the Chinese want to get products in, they cannot produce the product we can't sell a Chinese produced product. So if it goes to any of these other channels, there is a bit of an increase in price. But as they quote into projects in Europe or into Latin America and some of these other countries, there is no punitive tax, tariff or duty on that. So with China having also got stabilized post, you know, all the COVID-related issues, etc., there is increased competition coming from these locations. In any case, the most profitable market that we had outside of India was the US, or is the US market. But even there, there is competition coming in besides Chinese from, you know, other Chinese indirectly, but from other locations. Because if you see all other geographies, including Southeast Asia, etc., etc., the Middle East, these supply chains have all started, they are all now today in a normal state. They're pretty much equal to what it was in the pre-COVID period.
Sure.
There is a little bit of an intensity of competition, and that's why our sense is that, you know, a long-term guidance that we can maintain is a 25,000, you know, per ton basis. If some product mix changes or if we have anything, any favorable tailwinds, then it could be upwards of it.
Sure. And sir, just largely wanted to understand the realization difference between exports and domestic on the conductor side. Because largely when we produce this particular product domestically and so send it outside, so what is the realization difference in exports versus domestic?
So the way we had explained in some of the previous calls also is that most of the HTLS and OPGW and these higher end products are sold in the domestic market. And we've moved as much as possible of conventional products into overseas markets, where you can end up getting, you know, 10,000, 12,000 rupees a ton higher than domestic. So when you say 25,000 and looking at the order book you know, our crystal ball glazing as we look, you know, into FY24, etc., it takes into account this mix. That the conventional product will go to a larger extent towards export, and the premium products will be sold more in the domestic market.
Sure. That's it from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mohit Kumar from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening, sir. And congratulations on a very good set of numbers.
Thanks.
So my first question is, sir, you mentioned that you're seeing strong demand from new manufacturing capacity. Do you think the segment could be very high in FY24 and 25, or do you think it will remain minuscule in your entire revenue?
So I didn't get the question exactly. Are you saying that will the demand remain strong just in FY24 and 25?
No. So my question is, you said that you are seeing strong demand from new manufacturing capacities, right, which are being set up in this country.
Yes.
So my question is, does this add materially to the top line in FY24 and FY25, or is a very small part of your top line?
No, so for the cables division, it does have an a good incremental benefit, because if you see in terms of the mix that we have 54% of it at the moment getting exported for cables, and then the elastomeric cables is a big section for us, which goes into all these special industries, including renewable, etc. But the domestic power cable side of the business has a piece which goes into industry for instrumentation cables as well as power cables. So one of the projects which APAR has been involved in, besides building out its distribution network, is to engage with, you know, the top builders in the country, with the top MEP consultants. And these MEP consultants play quite an important role in terms of the whole cables going into industry. So it is, you know, as time passes on, it will become a more and more significant part of the cable business revenues.
Understood. And at some point of time, do you think that will increase the export of your high premium products can happen in the future?
Absolutely.
Are we targeting in near term? I think you say it's a slightly longer term thing.
So, you know, the way we've been selling our premium products in India, to a very large extent, we have been focused on delivering a complete turnkey solution. And that's the real benefit, where you go into a utility and then you pitch to them end to end, right from the concept through delivery and the results that come, you know, out of the execution of the contract. Now, we haven't climbed that, that level of maturity in overseas markets where we don't do turnkey contracts. So we have started engaging with various EPC contractors on some of these premium products. The demand for the premium products in countries like the United States is lower than in India because India has got very severe right-of-way issues.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in some of these other geographies, they are just designing a larger line to begin with, you know, using conventional products, but we've designed a line which can carry the current capacity and more. So it's definitely an endeavor, but I don't see that in the FY24, there won't be any meaningful contribution in FY24. There could be a higher input coming from it in 25, 26, etc. as we continue to engage with overseas customers.
So last question, sir. On slide number 42 of corporate presentation, you have shared the details of the end user segment. So where the renewables is 2.7%. And you said that renewables is going to be the main growth driver. So is this not true for the domestic right now? Is it renewables a very small portion as of now? It will grow very significantly over the next 2 years?
Yeah, so the renewables 2.7 is for the total. If you see exports, it's 48.7%.
Right.
And exports will also include some proportion of renewables.
So it has, you know, some of the others also segments carry renewables in the sense that you have EPC diversified. So that 0.6 also has EPC players who are buying. This 2.7% are largely the developers themselves buying, you know, products from us. Then in the other category also you will find some amount of renewables, but they are going through a distribution setup, you know, for rooftop solar and all these sort of products. So overall, you know, the renewable side of it is pretty strong. On the export side, it forms a huge chunk of that 48.7%. I'd say almost 70% of that is coming from renewables.
Understood. Thank you, sir. Thank you for the clarification and best of luck, sir. Thanks.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Amit Anwani from Prabhudas Lilladher. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Congratulations for the good set of numbers. My first question is on the conductors business. Obviously, pretty phenomenal performance this year with respect to EBITDA per ton. But just wanted to have more color, as you already highlighted, that you have factored in some Chinese competition and, supply chains getting back to normal. And we are guiding for 25,000 per ton. But so just wanted to understand, are we, going to see some moderation in realization, anything of that sort, or any color if you would like to throw with respect to geographical mix changing? And in your PPT, I can see you focused on penetrating into a high growth market. So if you could just throw some more color on what kind of strategy you're going to focus on this side.
So on the conductor, specifically on the conductor side, your question is in terms of that whether you see a margin compression and lower pricing. Is that your?
Yes, sir. So just want you to understand what would be the sustainable EBITDA pattern, because the 40,000 plus this year also we did not expect it. So this far exceeded the expectation.
So we've already given that guidance that a sustainable base number for us over the next, foreseeable future is 25,000 per ton.
Yes, sir. So what's the
there are, the situation is changing on a daily basis, but in case there are any favorable tailwinds, etc., even today we have a few dispatches that will happen on a fixed price on freight, you know, and therefore there may be some freight gain taking place on historical contracts. So we expect that, you know, it will normalize at around 25,000 per ton on the increased volume that we are talking about.
Right, sir. So anything on, sir, penetration on high growth market? Are we talking about more premium products or anything?
So the high growth markets, really for us, the way we are defining high growth markets for overseas markets is essentially those markets where a lot of renewable energy is going in. And so that is clearly happening in the United States. I have mentioned numbers earlier in the call that what information we've gathered as recently as a couple of weeks ago from some of our top customers and prospective customers in the United States, we are expecting solar installations to increase from 15 gigawatts per year to 30 gigawatts per year in the next 2 years. And then sustain that for several years if they are going to reach the internal targets which have been set, you know, within that country.
Right.
So that's really one high growth market. Australia is another market where we see steady execution over the next few years, both on transmission lines as well as on renewable energy generation sources. So these markets, I think, as we mentioned before, it's not going to be a 1 year, 2 year play. It's going to take longer than that to build out this infrastructure which has been targeted by these countries. And the good thing is that most of these countries are developed countries, and they do have, the countries do have the balance sheet to be able to execute these type of projects. They're not depending on third party aid, etc., like the African countries.
Sure. So my second question is on the premium versus non-premium, if you could share on exports and domestic. And second thing is, you mentioned that there is a 10 to 12,000 per ton difference for conventional between domestic and export. So if you could share any difference, you know, if possible for you, between premium and non-premium as well.
So the premium part of conductors is largely for India. And the non-premium, which call as the conventional conductor, that goes for the exports market. In terms of this pricing difference, it's difficult to give that comparable benchmark, because there are varieties and it's all order-based depending on particular order. So we won't be able to quantify the exact difference between the premium and non-premium.
Supplying a conventional conductor in India versus the same conductor in overseas market, then that's the delta, almost 10,000.
Sure.
Because the domestic market actually carries very low margins on conventional products, whereas the buyers overseas, especially the ones that we are targeting, are far more discerning in terms of the quality and approval process.
Sure, sir. My next question is, sir, on the cable side, you guided for 25-30% growth for FY24. Is it factoring in much higher growth on electromeric? That is one. Second, what is the contribution of electromeric we are expecting in FY24 or maybe 1 or 2 years going forward? And what is the contribution of railways in cables which we are expecting?
So the entire set of products that go to the Indian Railways is part of elastomeric cables. And our elastomeric cables business, we expect it to grow by about 25-30% FY24 versus FY23.
Sure, sir. So my last question is on B2C contribution. How much was the B2C contribution through distribution network?
So this year we have at about 175 crores, and the comparable number the previous year was a little under 100 crores. And our target is to be able to grow by 150 to 175 crores between this year and next year.
Sure. So, and elastomeric would be the highest margin business and within cables?
The elastomeric as a product category, yes. But then there are individual products, you know, which are niche products in each category that may actually also carry good margins. But as a product category, elastomeric cables, because it includes cables that are going to defense, it includes cables that are going to railway, and it includes the cables that are going to the solar wire, solar panel wiring as well as the windmill tower. So it is the most profitable of the categories that we have.
Sure, sir. Thank you very much. All the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nimish Shah from MK Investment Managers Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for this opportunity and congratulations on very good set of numbers. So almost all of my questions.
Sorry to interrupt, sir, but you are not clearly audible. I request you to please speak closer to the mic.
Yeah, am I audible?
Yes. Slightly better.
Yeah, thanks for this opportunity and congratulations on good set of numbers. All of my questions are answered, but I just have one question now on the again on the profitability in the conductor side. So the 25,000 per metric ton guidance that you've given on a sustainable basis, I just wanted to understand what kind of assumption in terms of the export mix do we have for that guidance? Like, does it factor in the current export mix of 60% in the order book, or slightly lower than that? Or some directional sense also.
It factors in about 50 to 55% of the revenues coming from export on a sustainable basis. So that's why we said, you know, when you have things like product mix changing, geographic mix changing, you know, you could have, you know, some tailwinds coming in and improving that number. But otherwise, on a steady state basis, this is what we plan. About 50 to 55% is what the export portion has been taken at.
Right. And the balance 40-45, will that have will that completely be premium products, or there will be some portion of the conventional products in the domestic mix?
It will be a mix there. So it will be a mix of premium products as well as the conventional products.
So it has, if you see the balance, it has a decent quantity of premium products, because it contains not only premium conductor products, but it also has all the copper-based products, which is your CTC wires, OPGW. Of course, OPGW is not copper-based, but it's fiber optic in there. And then we've introduced bus bars as the volume of the railway conductors will taper off. So bus bars, copper bus bars have also been added into the product stream. So we don't intend to do a very huge quantity of conventional, you know, just the ACSR conventional conductor. That's not part of that mix.
Understood. Yeah, that's it from my side. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Himanshu Upadhyay from O3 PMS. Please go ahead.
Hi. My question was...
We are not able to hear you. Your voice is cracking, Himanshu.
Yeah, am I audible now?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so my first question was on the competitive intensity, what you stated. Is that increased in domestic market also, and the high-end products what we have been doing very well in last few years? So is the competitive intensity higher?
So here, the specific reference is not in the domestic market, but it's with respect to the export market. Because if you see the delta which we had in profitability, that's come, a large portion of it was contributed from the export markets, you know, where we had not only an increase in volume, but also an increase in unit margin and realization. So we are referring to the export side.
Okay. And the next thing was, what is the situation on base oil prices? Because the last quarter they were falling and inventory write-offs were to be done. Have their prices stabilized, and is the demand higher than the supply, which was not the case for base oil last quarter?
You are referring to our oil division?
Yeah. So the raw material...
I mentioned that the pricing scenario there has stabilized. the pricing has stabilized from February month onwards. And as we get into FY24, the at least the starting point seems reasonably stable.
Keeping question. The industrial volumes in the lubricant space fell by 9% in the quarter. Is this reason what happened?
It was largely due to pricing considerations where, you know, where the margins were a bit tight. So all the commodity type or the lower lower margin products on industrial, we allowed that volume to fall. We kept our focus on the more strategic and long-term customers. But if you see overall year-on-year, there's a growth that has happened.
Yeah, overall. And have you started winning orders in the renewable side in export markets? And will we have significant revenue in FY24?
Over 70% of the order book that we have on exports and what we're executing on exports is actually finding its way into the renewable energy segment.
No, this is for wiring part, I was asking.
Yeah.
So, we have started getting orders in that business also, for which we have taken that UL approvals and everything.
Yeah, so the UL approvals are catering to, without UL approval, you can't supply into the renewable energy segment there. So, these are wires which are going in for panel wiring, for solar panel wiring, for electrical panel wiring, and for taking the output into substations. So any electrical product in the US requires a UL approval. There are also segments which are wires that are going in into the housing segment, but that's not the house wires. They're the power cables, which the low tension cables which are used for evacuating or bringing power into a house. Not the internal wiring that's going in the house.
Thank you for my time. Best of luck for you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Pujan Shah from Congruence Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. My first question would be on the cable division. As we have said, our order book is around 1200 crores and which is going to be executed in this quarter specifically. So for that trajectory, it would be around, let's suppose the same order book flows for the year would be around 4,800. And currently our cable division revenue is around 3,300 also. So are we being conservative or are we being seeing some decline, or this is the seasonal, or being is the seasonal quarter being a good trajectory?
No, I think what Ramesh meant is the order book will be executed in a 3 to 4 month sort of window over a quarter. And our guidance basically is we did around 3,200 odd crores last year. And we can see a 25% to 30% increase on that, as the guidance that we are able to provide. So fundamentally, the execution will be in that 1,000 crore per quarter kind of range.
Okay, got it. And sir, we have been improved our EBITDA margin by 200 BPS over guidance for cable division. So are we being seeing our export book growing up that way, or we are prominent in premium products and that's why we are seeing a bit growth on EBITDA margin?
So I think it's a combination of both. That we continue to see, overall growth in the export volume. We are also seeing a better mix of customers, domestically, including, as the retail and the distribution part of the business grows, and that carries better margins than what you would supply to a utility. We are seeing growth on railways and some of these other areas also. So overall, it's just the product mix. There's also some benefits which will come on conversion costs. As the volumes keep growing, there are efficiencies of scale also that come in. So it's not necessary that you will see the EBITDA improving only because margin realization is improving, but there's also economies of scale in manufacturing and things which kick in.
Okay, sir. And my last question would be on, as we have disclosed in the presentation for the specific industry, like specific industry contributes 8.6%. So in that, how much defense is contributing and how defense is evolving for our business coming year?
I don't think you want to get into all the very sub, you know, sort of levels. But the only point is that the railways will grow at a faster pace than defense, because there is a huge activity happening on the railway side. Again, there is activity happening on the renewable energy side in India. But if we see better pricing coming from the overseas market, then we will push the product into the overseas market. But one clear area where elastomeric cables will grow is in the wind segment as well as in the Indian railways.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vaibhav Bajatia from Honesty and Integrity Investment. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir. Thanks for providing the opportunity. So I have a few questions on the oil division. So just wanted to understand fundamentally, you know, the transformer oil and white oil business. You know, transformer oil business is highly concentrated in terms of 2-3 players having big market share. But white oil has largely commoditized, while the raw material is mostly same, come from the same source. So what is the difference that white oil, a lot of small players have been able to commoditize that product, but not the transformer oil? What is the reason for that?
It starts off with your assumption, which is not accurate, that the raw material that goes into white oil and into transformer oil comes from the same source. You may have a refinery that produces grades for both the products, but they are different grades. And the characteristics that the raw material needs to have are vastly different between the two.
Okay. Okay.
Secondly, the white oil side, there are two sets of products. You have one set of products which are technical grade products, which have much lower specification and standards. The other one is products which are pharmaceutical grade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the pharmaceutical grade products are also more difficult to manufacture. So really the commoditization is in the technical grade white oils, or what they call technical grade white oils in terms of, you know, the pharmacopoeia standard.
Okay, okay. So the technical grade is used mostly in FMCG kind of,
is not used only in FMCG. Technical grade is used in a lot of industrial applications on, you know, in white oil. So it's like knitting oils and wherever you need non-staining, you know, so master batches, you know, things like that. So those are relatively more commodity.
Right.
The lower end, some of the hair oil companies in India, they including, I don't want to name, but there are some very big names in here also that actually buy a relatively poor quality product.
Right. Got it.
So that segment has got largely commoditized. In the case of transformer oil, especially on the power transformer side, there are relatively fewer players because it's a very, you know, very high specification in terms of what needs to be delivered.
Got it.
Two sets of raw materials and two sets of, you know, specifications on products.
Got it. And this is, you know, the question on China, particularly in the in our oil division itself. So China, before COVID, China was aggressive everywhere, you know, every kind of business, there is a lot of cost competitiveness that China used to throw in terms of pricing the product and gaining market share. But we have not seen that happening on the transformer oil side. So why it is the case that they're more domestically focused, they don't want to export these kind of product and create international competition?
So we don't see Chinese competition in the oil business, period. We don't see Chinese competition in transformer oil, white oil, lubricants, outside of, meaning either in India or outside India. The whole oil industry in China is dominated by PetroChina, by the state oil companies. and they see little benefit in carrying all these specialty grades, you know, outside of their country.
Right.
So the Chinese competition is more in terms of conductors outside of North America as well as in some of the cable categories.
Got it. And lastly, you know, this impact of you know, electric vehicles that is going to be there both on the demand side for our product and the raw material side for our product, because EVs will sure adversely impact auto lubricant business, but on the other hand, transmission distribution transformer oil business can offset that. But on the raw material side, you know, if refineries are not going to be throwing as much output, then over long term, how the base oil prices are going to behave? Any view that you might offer, and how we are going to cope up?
So, you know, I don't have any view to offer as such, because the adoption of electric vehicles, you know, the trajectory of that is still not clear. So in India, you are seeing traction happening largely in two-wheelers. And the total volume of two-wheelers and lubricants is not necessarily very large, because it's only 900 ml or 1 liter goes into a particular motorcycle or a scooter. Scooter is even less. So there is the main lubricant demand comes from trucks. That's the largest segment, followed by agriculture, which is your tractors, harvesters, all those things. And then next comes passenger car, and then the last is motorcycles. So right now, adoption of motorcycles has been increasing, but overall lubricant sales, you know, is almost flat, but hasn't fallen.
Got it.
Yeah.
And lastly, you know, I think in 2021 we launched this new natural ester based transformer oil. Any development on that? How much it has become as a percentage of the
oil?
It's
still in a development stage, in the sense that many utilities, there are about 6 utilities in India that have installed transformers with the ester oil in it. So our sense is it will take a few years for getting the feedback. And also in all these, you know, as the ESG pressure starts coming on these entities, the adoption will then increase once they've got confidence that the product works. Yeah. Okay. I think there's a bunch of others who want to get into the queue.
Yes.
So maybe
that's it from my side. Yeah.
Someone else too. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sujal Chandaria from Girik Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hello, am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Congratulations on this set of numbers. I had a few questions around cable segment. So in cable segment, are we facing similar increasing competitive intensity in export markets as in case of conductor segment?
So there is some amount of, you know, as I said, basically as the supply chains are getting normalized, you know, customers are coming back. During the COVID period, people were ready to pay any price that was quoted, because supplies were difficult, supply chains were broken, etc. So as they normalize, it's natural that, you know, negotiations will start happening with a higher intensity than was during the COVID period. Having said that, Chinese companies are active on the cable side, including trying to export to the US, and that export is happening through indirect means. As I explained earlier, that they've either taken over a company in some other geography. But that doesn't allow them to have exactly the same competitive intensity as they would have if they were exporting from China directly.
Okay, got it.
To gain some share, they are quoting prices which are aggressive, etc. But we, you know, the cable market is very large, and it allows opportunity to go to, you know, different clients. And different geographies also.
Okay, so the volume, so basically the volume growth in the export market won't be a problem, but the margin could be impacted in that sense, right?
Yeah, the margins could be a little bit lower than in the previous periods, just simply because simply because of you know, the supply chain getting getting smoothened out. But we are going into newer and newer markets, and we are also from existing customers. We are hoping to get larger amount of business, because last year was the first year where the cable business really did a massive amount of export. We hit 1400 plus crores of export last year, which was the first year where it was such a big chunk of the revenues. Also, keep in mind that margins, as I mentioned earlier, is also a factor of your conversion cost and the efficiencies of scale that you have. So as the business keeps scaling up, the conversion cost will also improve.
Okay, okay. Just on the last question on this quarter margins, we made about 12.4% margins. So it, I guess largely was because of the improved product mix and, as you said, the conversion cost. So the premium portion, which you are saying the unsustainable factor, would it count as meaningful in the margin terms for cable?
So, in the fourth quarter, we had quite a lot of shipments that were taken by, you know, by customers where we supply a lot of specialized cables, like the defense bot. There were quite a few shipments that went into defense. There was more shipments that went into the Indian Railways, etc. So that's how, you know, we had a higher percentage. But I would really look at the full year, because that would, you know, you can have a quarter which can give a misleading number. When you look at a rolling four quarter period, it will give a better idea or an estimate. But overall, we see an improved EBITDA on 25 to 30% increased volume in the cable business.
Okay, okay. Thank you. That's from myself.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Gopal from HDFC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. And thanks to the entire team for great sets of results. I just want to understand, you know, the better profitability on the conductor business. Is the current domestic profitability tending towards the long-term profitability which we have guided for, and or we are at upper end or the lower end of this, and how the export profitability is likely to behave in the times to come? Thanks.
Yeah, so, you know, the domestic profitability is not something that we will see some major changes on. It's really the domestic profitability can move up and down based on the mix of product. You know, in case HTLS reduces, then it will have an impact. But otherwise, it's already in a reasonably steady state. Where you can see a certain fall in profitability is from some of these favorable things which we had on export.
Sure.
You know, the freight, logistics, etc., these are all export phenomena. It is not really anything on the domestic side.
Okay. I can sense that, but what we are seeing, like with the rising volume and, you know, like tremendous demand in export countries. So just wanted to sense, you know, some of the directionally, how do you foresee actually? Because you know, guiding from 58 or 45,000 in the yearly basis to 25, you know, so it's a very long term. So just we wanted to know the trajectory. How do you foresee actually?
So, I mean, it's not going to fall off like a step from, you know, straight down to 25, but in a few quarters, it'll come down towards, you know, that level, which we think is a good steady state base level.
Sure, sir. And in any, you know, strategy on the consumer cable business, how is it progressing? Any qualitative, you know, statement?
So there is a slide in the pack which actually gives all the metrics, you know, on that. And as we said earlier, you know, we have been working towards a game plan of increasing distributors, you know, electricians who are onboarded with the company, etc. And that's going on as per the plan.
Got it. Thanks
a lot. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pawan Nahar, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Kushal Bhai, Apar Bhai, Kushal Bhai, Chaitanya Bhai, and team Apar. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So a few questions. One is we've done about 107 rupees EPS in H2. And as you said, the conductor profits would not fall off immediately, but in a few quarters it will get to that long-term trajectory. So can we expect that for the first half, this run rate to be maintained broadly?
Actually what will happen, Pawan, is that the P&L will be depending on the amounts of projects that we are executing. So, you know, all these are make-to-order business, and we normally look at, give the guidance and based on a 12-month number, because a quarter or a half year may not represent the current picture. So, you know, based on the guidance on the 12-month picture is how we need to work out. And at the since it's the beginning of the year, it's too early to predict the how things would pan out during the, you know, half year one or half year two.
So, Pawan's question is on the first half, whether the first half, whether you can take fourth quarter and extrapolate it. I don't think that that's going to be the level. It's what, you know, the fourth quarter was a very, very strong quarter, which is largely not replicable. But the first half of this year, you know, should be comparable or maybe even slightly better than the first half of last year, because if you saw the third and fourth quarter of last year really pulled away in terms of, you know, the profitability and margin. So, but it will, it, you know, we expect it to come off, the conductor margins to come off over a couple of quarters. You know, there'll be a fall in Q1 and then again further fall in Q2. Because the new business which is getting signed on is not carrying those sort of outsized margins.
No issues. I mean, basically what we are saying is FY24 will be a year of normalization for the long-term trend, right? I mean, it may still be a little better.
In cricket parlance, you know, we scored a triple century in the fourth quarter. So, you know, we may not score a triple century in FY24, but if you see the long-term trends of the products and all, they're all going in the right direction.
So basically, it normalizes in FY24, and after that, next 3 to 5 years of strong growth for the firm as a whole.
Yeah, you see steady growth happening. And, you know, I gave an example of what the US is expecting from, you know, the major customers that we are in touch with. They are expecting to go from 15 gigawatt to 30 gigawatt. So even if some amount of competitive intensity increases and things, the market itself is going to grow double in size. And we are, you know, and as time passes by, I think we'll be better entrenched with some of these clients.
In fact, Chaitanya, based on your guidance, I was just doing some back of the envelope maths, and what it appears to me in FY24, cables will be approx 40% plus of our net profit. Right? I mean, you may not, but I was just doing the maths, so that was interesting. The third thing I wanted to ask you was, what is the volume growth we are speaking for conductors this year? Only 15, or it could be higher?
10 to 15. No, 10 to 15%.
10 to 15%. Okay. And
so, if the volume of HTLS goes up, then, you know, the total volume in terms of tonnage will go down. The value will go up. So about 10 to 15% in terms of number of metric tons processed.
Got it. And all the best. Thank you so much. Wonderful.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was our last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Kushal Desai for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you. I'd like to thank everyone for participating in our Q4 and FY23 earnings call. Thank you for your patience and your involvement and appreciation of the company's results. I'd just like to conclude by saying that we still see, you know, all the long-term growth metrics are in place. Profitability in the fourth quarter was a bit outsized. There will be some amount of normalization as we go into FY24 and 25, but all the growth indices seem to be intact. and we are looking forward to the next few years of continuing our trajectory of growth. So thank you very much.
Thank you. On behalf of APAR Industries Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.